Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go back to 2011 with Squidge. Let's look at the World Cup again with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective Podcast, the rugby podcast that exists. That makes it sound like it's the only one. That's not true, because we are, of course, joined by a host of another one. I'll quickly introduce Will Owen. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm up surprisingly early. This is about 7 hours ahead of my schedule being awake. So, yeah, I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine. I am tired. I got about 4 hours sleep last night. Hopefully that doesn't come into play. I just didn't sleep very well one of those nights and then got up to watch the Super Rugby this morning anyway. And we are recording it in the morning, as you say. Joining us, Wales Online's one and only Mr. Ben James. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Yeah, I slept quite well. I watched the first half of the game we're talking about last night, and I watched the second half, so that helps for sleep, I think. Put the first half on, and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
I've got to say, with having you on as well, Ben, that I now, by default, have the second best lockdown beard of the people on this podcast, so I've got to commend you on that, so well done.
Yeah.
This beard... I shaved it off at the start of lockdown because I thought it was going to be annoying, and now it's sort of grown back. So I'm kind of gutted that I didn't leave it and see what I think. I'd be full on like Castro at this point. Giovanni, not Fidel. Just to clarify.
We didn't ask Jake Ball to feature on the podcast, but I think if you left it there, then there would have been a bit of confusion.
Yeah, I think Jake Ball is a fit-in sort of lookalike.
Good thing to aim for.
Jake Ballsack, as he's better known in BBC circles. I shouldn't say that. I'm going to get sacked.
You're going to get Ballsack.
What a way to go, though. Hey!
I don't even work for the BBC, so it doesn't matter, actually. But, you know, I'll still get sacked. Yeah, the beard. I actually interviewed Sean Fitzpatrick the other week on this very sofa. We're on Zoom now, so you can see the sofa. And this sofa has also been used as a bed for colleagues on nights out in Cardiff. So he was there going, "Oh, I like your beard." I was like, "Well, it's a sofa." He's like, "No, your beard, your facial hair." And I was like, "Oh, Christ, I've just embarrassed myself in front of Sean Fitzpatrick." And I didn't even cut it out of the podcast because I couldn't be bothered in editing. So to the three listeners, enjoy it.
See, it's having had the same thing of interviewing Juan Morgaminara.
Yes, he said Argentina.
For some reason... Yeah, at the beginning, asking of how lockdown's going in Argentina, which I don't know. I don't know why I said Argentina. It's not like I don't know. He's who he is. He is Mr. Uruguay.
Yeah, but he is Uruguay.
He could have answered.
Yeah.
You know, he could have said, "Well, yeah, it's a good question. How is lockdown going in Argentina?" You know, you could ask me, "How's lockdown going in England?" I'd give you an answer. I mean, I'm not from England, but you know, that's Uruguay rugby for you. Just don't care about Argentina, do they?
Absolutely. He just said he didn't like the question and left it at that.
that's a better answer, that.
Yeah,
that's fair enough.
I'm going to keep that one in my back pocket for later.
He's given a full judgment. The worst thing as well is, A, because it's the first thing I say when I start speaking to him, I can't cut that out. And also because it was initially in the feed, the thing I did for World Rugby, and then they gave me, I did an extended version on the YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Having been, you know, a minute or so in that edit. And I don't edit the feed. So someone else was able to leave that in. So like there was a really stupid question. I know. Like, I asked Shane a really stupid question as well when I interviewed him. And they cut that out, but they kept in the bit of his answer where he was nice to me. So that was good.
I think I've lost track of the stupid questions I've asked Shane, to be honest.
Yeah.
Doesn't answer my phone calls anymore. So if you're listening, Shane, pick up.
On the contrary, when we interviewed Blaine Scully for this podcast, I made a stupid joke that didn't get recognised to him, and I did cut that out, so I'm winning.
Nice.
You did. I forgot about that.
Yeah. That's how cynical I am. That's basically the only time that I've done something stupid and I've bothered cutting it out. But, yeah.
I sort of edge towards laugh track. If there's a stupid joke that doesn't get a reaction, just laugh track in a podcast. It's not been done yet. I think it should be.
Yeah, edit in.
See, I've saved you editing there. It's in.
That's it. If yeah. we all just stop and laugh now, then we'll win you editing this. Yeah, you can just drop in a clip of us all laughing.
Sure. Yeah. I can just use that clip there of the Ben James laugh.
It's quite iconic. Occasions.
Yeah. It's like my one kind of acting skill I have is I'm really good at looking like I'm laughing genuinely when I'm not. It's the one skill. Thing I can get away with. It's the only
thing. When our first episode of this podcast went out, one of my friends listened to it who you've met maybe a couple of times. He's like a very good friend of mine. And he said, like, oh, I really enjoyed it, but I could just always tell when Robbie was pretending to laugh.
Deliberately
didn't laugh.
What's
there.
The tell? What's the giveaway?
I don't know. Any ideas, Robbie?
I couldn't tell you because I genuinely don't know when I find something funny or not myself.
Is it like a pantomime sort of leg slap?
It's like that. It's a bit like that, yeah. My voice goes up so loud.
Geez, that was Jimmy Carr sort of levels of...
Yeah. If I go any higher, only dogs can hear it.
You do realise, when you didn't laugh a minute ago, I'm just going to put the Ben James laugh track in there to cover that up.
People are going
to
think I'm insane just laughing every, like, 2 seconds. Well, more insane than usual.
Yeah, sure. Shall we mention the game that we're talking about in the rugby?
Might as well.
No.
Yeah. Okay. You've listened to the podcast. You know what it's like.
I've derailed it now. Yeah. So the 1999 World Cup was good, wasn't it?
I was two.
I was four. There you go.
I was three.
It's not a competition.
Yeah. What memories between us? Should we get someone on that was five, and we slowly work our way up to someone that can remember it?
Sure.
Year by year. Yeah.
Yeah. That's if there is somebody of each age, you know, in the world.
It's quite bleak, wasn't it? Yeah. That was bleak.
Yeah, I know. I mean, so welcome to Children of Men.
Lockdown's been tough, but not that tough. I mean...
Okay, I'm going to take a moment and overrule here. The game we're supposed to be doing, in theory, the whole point is the podcast is just a conduit for larks to temporarily become a character in a period drama. I don't know why I was suddenly played by Colin Firth for a moment there. So, Wales 17, Samoa 10. In the 2011 Rugby World Cup, rugby was indeed played. Now, my main memory of this was less the game and more now how nervous I was before it started as a Wales fan.
Yeah, and during the match as well. I mean, the nerves... The thing is, right, because this game was broadcast about 4 a.m.
It was 6 a.m.
in real
time.
Yeah. 6 a.m., okay. Yeah. Either way, we got up very early to watch it, and I can just remember, like... Just from seeing the teams walk out, just how nervous I was and just how tired I was all rolled into one.
I remembered nothing, which is the perfect answer for this podcast. Yeah, I can't remember any sort of feeling, which is how I go about most days, to be honest. I don't have any feelings. So, but yeah, it was nerve-wracking, wasn't it? And just watching the teams come out, it's amazing how some players have aged and others haven't. Like Dan Lydiot looks so young, and yet Jamie Roberts just has the same jawline as today.
Yeah.
I hate him for it.
When Lee Halfpenny comes on at halftime, and he looks like a baby.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just because he's clean shaven, but he doesn't look... No, he does look like the same man, you know, but he looks properly infantile.
Yeah, Foxy too. Foxy looks like a child who's just come through, you know, and that's a man who's been living in a pub since he was a kid, you know. So you'd think he'd age pretty well, but...
Yeah, Paul James is the other one. I forgot he even played. I just assume that Gethin Jenkins has played every Wales game since, you know, 1993. Then you see Paul James running out ahead of Alan Wynne-Jones from the tunnel. You assume it's his 50th cap, because why else would he be going ahead of Alan Wynne-Jones? But Alan Wynne-Jones is like halfway down the team at this point.
Yeah.
And the other thing that gets me with Paul James is his mouth guard. Anyone who willingly wears a mouth guard that makes you look like David Letterman is a fool. I don't know why it's like, oh yeah, I'll wear a mouth guard that looks like I have two teeth.
Yeah.
Notice that in the anthems and thought, oh, handsome boy. But
is it a bit? Is he doing it as a joke?
Surely.
What's it all about?
I'm a big Letterman fan. Massive Letterman fan, Paul James. It's a well known fact in Welsh rugby.
Liam Williams has his like red and white mouth guard where it looks like, you know, he's got alternate teeth missing. It looks like he's got really patterned, bad teeth.
Bleeding.
And the irony is he lost his teeth, didn't he, playing for too long?
Yeah. Yeah, I also found with just seeing Paul James, I really missed how good that Welsh scrum was with Paul James and Adam Jones.
Oh, it was good, wasn't it?
Because I'm just so used to the Welsh scrum just about holding their own, then eventually starting to get away penalties in the second half.
Yeah.
Whereas here, when they were completely dominant with those two, as they had been with the Ospreys, when they basically had the best scrum in Europe for a couple of years and kind of kept them in the competition when the rest of the team wasn't so great, I've missed Adam Jones so much. I've missed also Paul James being a really good scrummaging loosehead. Like, yeah, he wasn't Geoffrey Jenkins, you know, he wasn't the most complete player, but he was a great scrummager.
Yeah.
Because in this game, yeah, they get absolutely mullered at, like, the first scrum, don't they? Like, Samoa drive them off their own ball against the head on their 5-metre line. But then after that, Wales just have everything in the scrum. There's one where I think they drive Samoa good, like, 5-10 yards back, and then Faletau knocks it on. So you just see Adam Jones just turning around in the middle of, like, a dismantled scrum, just looking so frustrated. And, like, yeah, Bomb only has three emotions, which he showed in this game. It's, like, confusion during the hacker. Just looked bored out of his mind. And then it's either aggressive or just sort of uninterested.
Hungry.
Yeah. He's got a range.
Yeah, is hungry an emotion? If hungry is an emotion, I think hangry is an emotion.
Hangry is an emotion.
Adam doesn't strike me as the kind of person that gets
doesn't
hangry.
Do angry.
But I... Yeah. Okay, now I think he doesn't get hangry... Yes. Hangry because he doesn't wait that long before eating.
I couldn't comment. Couldn't possibly comment.
So, we began touching on the Welsh team. They kept the same starting 15 that played against Samoa.
South Africa.
Yes, it is the same 15 that played against Samoa, though. You can't take that away from me.
Put the laugh track in.
So, mostly, it's the team that would play for Wales for years to come with, you know, Robertson Davis, George North on the wing, Shane as, you know, mainstay, Phillips at scrum half, then Rhys Priestland in the year of the priest when everyone kind of, you know, people don't appreciate how good he was or they only talk about how good he was in this World Cup. But Rhys Priestland was... He had such a great World Cup and was so key to everything Wales did well in this game and all the others in the World Cup.
I don't think a fly half's got the best out of Jamie Roberts like Rhys Priestland did.
Hmm. Yeah,
2011, absolutely. 2012. He was just phenomenal.
Just yeah, yeah.
Took the ball to the line so well.
Yeah, and you think of Jamie Roberts and you just think of his sort of tight carries that he does sort of off nine. Yeah. But really, Priestland got so much more than that out of him. Like, even with Priestland's kicking game and stuff, getting Roberts to chase them, there was like such... And I guess Foxy as well at the start of his international career as a first choice centre, I suppose. But he got so much out of the two of them in areas that you wouldn't expect off those two players.
I think at the time, during the Six Nations, Foxy and Roberts were playing the other way around. So... Foxy was playing 12, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And Roberts was playing 13. And you can see that in this game because the amount of times Jamie Roberts is in the 13 channel, even the 15 channel, he's so wide.
Yeah.
I think he scored a try against Italy off that in the Six Nations the following year. They gave a dummy.
Yeah.
A dummy. Madness.
It's a good 45 yards as well, wasn't it?
But I mean, he nearly scored early in this game, didn't he? But then Luke Charteris gave the most forward of four passes.
Yeah. Should we just talk about that then? So Shane Williams makes two breaks in a row. Because, I mean, first off, to get Wales into that position, Shane Williams makes a goal line turnover. Should we just talk about that for a second?
Yeah.
He makes a turnover, runs 5 yards and boots the ball away. And it's a really good clearance.
Yep.
Wales get the ball back and then Shane makes two breaks in a row.
So I'll just touch on the turnover. It begins with, it looks like Samoa in for all money. I think it's Joe Stowers, the number 8, is... about to go over. Toby Faletau makes an incredible try-saving tackle as the ball's going down. He kind of slides under. You know, kind of reminiscent of the one he'd do in, 6 years' time after this for the Lions, where he properly gets under someone playing against one of the Invitational New Zealand teams.
It's the New Zealand Barbars.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Who was the ref that game? Was it?
Angus Gardner.
That was it. He did a great slide.
Yes, he did.
All I remember.
That kind of disco move.
Yeah.
Disco Angus.
Made it about him, you know? Come on.
Yeah.
Referees.
Yeah.
I love Angus Gardner. I've got a lot of time for
him. Yeah, big fan of him.
I also like, because if someone pointed out to him, he'd go, oh yeah, it was a bit disco, and move on, you know? He's the only referee that ever admits he's wrong.
Yeah.
And I love
that. He was too disco. I apologise.
Yeah.
Or admits the TMO's wrong as well.
Yeah.
And just says to him, no, fuck off, you're wrong. My decision was fine.
He's the only referee I've ever seen who doesn't have an ego.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
calm about
quite
everything
remarkable.
He does. It's great. Yeah.
To say he's Australian as well, it's a real turn up. Welcome to the Angus Gardner Appreciation Podcast, sponsored by David Letterman. And yeah, so anyway, Faletau makes this brilliant turnover. Alan Wynne-Jones then comes and fires himself into the ruck, which kind of almost dislodges the ball slightly and allows, you know, Shane to pick it up, run, clear the ball. Yeah. The ball then bounces. Paul Williams, the Samoan fullback.
Not the Welsh rugby journalist.
No, or the referee. No,
the Welsh rugby journalist is now on at fullback for Samoa.
Yeah. At one point, Grant Nisbet says, it's the Samoan with the, well, only in a Kiwi accent, it's the Samoan with a Welsh name.
I enjoyed
clearly
that.
Clearly anticipating. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. He also, Grant Nisbet, twice called Hugh Bennett Hugh Davies.
Yes, I've got that written down on my notes. And there's not another Davies in the pack. Davies, I'm getting into the Stuart Barnes Lions.
Yeah, the Grant Nisbet.
Yeah. Oh, it's Davies. It's like, it's 20 miles away from where you live, Stuart. Come on, get it right. It's Davis. Sorry, I'm carrying a lot of issues. I've got a lot of baggage. I'm going to get out on this podcast.
That's okay. Do you want to talk about it? Or
No. But the other thing with that Shane Williams thing, I don't know why. It's when he kicks it, I expect him to get flipped. And I think it's because it's such a similar kick to the one we did in the third, fourth playoff where like two Australians just like pulverize him. So watching that, I'm thinking, he's going to die here. And then he doesn't. Because later on, Charteris gets high tackled by George Stowers.
Yes.
Which is how?
Which is impressive. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like tackling a crane high.
So do you have a ladder?
I don't mean the bird. I mean the, yeah, like, exactly.
Jordan Crane.
It's like how? Jordan Crane, yeah. It's like tackling Jordan
that's
Crane.
That's one for the rugby experts in listening.
So the point, just to pick up on Grant Nisbet getting names wrong as well. Because I did this as a segment last week. This time, I just noted the two, just Hugh Davis and Talafau. He calls Faletau.
I love that one.
He calls both Taulafo and Faletau Talafau.
Yes.
Like they're the same player. So he gets stuck between the two of them.
And the other one is, obviously, Alamin Jones gets falconed from a line-out.
Yes.
And then he
Wynne-Jones.
And they all think it's Lydia. And the irony is, Lydia does his ankle as a lifter in that lineout, and they're like, oh, that's a bit of bad luck, isn't it? He's got hit in the face, and now he's gone off with an ankle injury. It's like, no, he hasn't. That's Alan Wynne-Jones.
And it's remarkable that he's not one of the players, because normally Grant Nisbet knows two players from a non-Kiwi team. I'm amazed one of them wasn't Alan Wynne-Jones. I'm amazed it wasn't him and Shane Williams were the only players he knew.
Yeah, but in this case, it probably was just Shane, wasn't it? And maybe Adam Jones? I don't know.
Adam's
it might
distinctive,
be, he's just
he?
Got a, yeah, he's distinctive and has an easy name to remember.
Yeah.
So
he's got a Welsh name.
Yeah.
In the Welsh team. Yeah, Grant Nisbet would say. That's a Welsh name in the Welsh team.
Yeah. The point I was going to pick up on the clearance by Shane, is that so Shane clears the ball, and the guy that then makes the tackle on Paul Williams, the fullback, on the 22-metre line is Alan Wynne-Jones, who just cleared out the ruck on his own try line. Which is remarkable.
Silly.
Like, people who don't rate Alan Wynne-Jones are because they're seeing that and they're just going, oh, he's just making a tackle. He's just making a normal tackle.
Yeah.
But actually, he's sprinted 80 metres, having made it a decisive clear out moments early to turn the ball over on his own line.
And kept up with
80 metres. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Kept up with the winger and managed to tackle the fullback successfully as a second row, 80 metres downfield. He's incredible. He just does this every single game and has been doing it every game since about 1991. Like,
it's too much. 2 years it's too much, isn't it? It's too much. Give someone else a chance. You know, let someone else make a tackle, Alan. Come on.
Yeah.
It's silly.
You know.
Also, this was slightly before really teams start to implement kind of like a 1-3-1, 1-3-3-1 structure or anything like that. And the amount of times Alan Wynne would sprint across the field to hit a ruck that Wales would have otherwise lost, you know. Alan Wynne eventually ended up getting man of the match in this game. The official man of the match.
And because it's the same team that hire Grant Nisbet, when they say Alan Wynne-Jones are man of the match today, they cut to Bradley Davis.
Yes, yeah, they do, yeah.
Which he doesn't even look at. It's just, I don't know, do all second rows look the same? They just go, who's a tall bloke on the pitch? Can we see? Someone wearing red. He's tall.
Yeah, I think you get to a point where they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike Phillips next picked off.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, just Charteris gets hit, doesn't he, by George Stowers. It is properly high. And then minutes later, he's out in the Y channels for some reason, giving the most forward of forward passes. Like, Jamie Roberts has to not just reach, but pretty much jump to get that.
Oh, it's like the length of his torso forward.
Yeah, that's why they call it a forward pass, because it's done by forwards. Yeah. Bit of a joke there for you. If you get that laugh track, please.
That's very good. That's very good.
Oh, that's a good one. I might put two laugh tracks on that one.
I would. Can we get the Seinfeld bass as well?
You just walk out the room now. What's the deal with forward passes?
That was a classic, that was.
The day Luke Charteris retired is like the day rugby died for most commentators, like Jiffy, because it's just like, any time he picks the ball up within the opposition half, it's like, oh, he could just dive over from here. And it's that joy that they've, you know, it's like they've thought of this joke when they haven't. And that, you know, that keeps rugby going.
It's okay that Devon Toner's still playing, so he can still use it.
Just about.
But he's not getting picked for Ireland, is he? Because of, foreign imports, which is another thing. Neil Francis. Was it Neil Francis who said that? Who was
Ireland
it? Who had
imports.
No, Devon Toner wasn't picked for Ireland. Obviously, someone else was. A foreign import.
Jean Klein.
Oh, right. I thought. Yeah. I'm sorry. I heard iron because of ironing boards.
Yeah, because of ironing
boards. It was because of ironing boards.
It was because he was doing the team kit as well.
It was.
It was too far for him to reach down to iron properly. So they had to buy taller ironing boards, and that was such a cost to the IRFU.
It's Rallis' fault for retiring.
I thought it was. Yeah. I thought it was Neil Francis who had a go, but I don't think it was. It was Pichot, wasn't it?
Yeah. Gus Peter did, yeah.
I can't believe I just laid that at Neil Francis's door.
It does feel like this kind of thing. Neil Francis probably said it as well. Just he was whispering it while Gus Peter was saying it quite calmly and politely in a Gus Peter way whilst wearing trainers. But it felt like he was shouting.
Why does Gus Peter hate ironing boards?
He can't stand them.
He just does.
Because he doesn't like ironing his shirts. You've seen him turn up in creased shirts enough.
That's fair. That's
young
fair.
People aren't going to get into rugby if they're ironing. See, need to be playing Fortnite.
Now we keep kind of throwing to this and walking around this, but this is a kind of tradition in our household. Is it kind of began as like a superstition that Wales wouldn't play?
I was actually
well
going to bring this up today. So yeah, carry on.
Wales wouldn't play well if our mutual mother, Mr. Will Owen, is actually watching the game. So she used to have initially she just kind of perched in the doorway and watch it as though she's just leaving the room and she just happened to have stopped by. And Wales would play better for whatever reason. It was a superstitious thing. And then it became, actually, she would do the ironing at the same time. And it happened to be, you know, just she happened to pick to do the ironing at 3 p.m. on a Saturday during the Six Nations.
And also, it would always be a thing that, like, if we're playing against England, she wouldn't iron white shirts.
Yes.
Or playing against France, Scotland, Italy. No blue, you know?
Yeah.
They've got to wait for next week.
So, historically, I've always had to make a note of what shirts I'm wearing in the lead up to that week, so I can't wear blue shirts at all during the Six Nations, really, just in case. And because you take all my washing and take it back, you know, when even living away.
Do you think our family's a bit weird?
No, I don't. I think this is entirely, I think there's a great correlation between this and Wales' success.
Yeah, okay. I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
And obviously I was in on all this, which is why I knew to segue to ironing boards.
Yeah, of course. Well, no,
I'm a master podcaster, and this was all planned.
It's funny to bring up Robbie because I actually watched the game back with her. Mm-hmm. So
was she allowed in the room, or was it sort of like
ironing
in the corridor? It's like they could still lose this time.
No, I had to tell her about half an hour ago that Wales do in fact win the game. Like she asked, you know, do you remember who wins? And I was like, yeah. Who is it? It's Wales, you know? Yeah. Because, you know, it was pretty contentious for a lot of it. I have a very good one-liner. Well, not a one-liner, but something she said during the game written down to read out. But she was saying about when Andy Powell came on. I mean, there were a few things that were said about Andy Powell. But firstly, Samoa obviously get into the game, and then she pulls out the classic, Sean Edwards is going to kill him at half-time. And Sean Edwards is going to say to them, "What did we tell you?" And Andy Powell says, "No beer before kickoff." It's like, what else did we tell you, Andy? So that is a line from our mum.
Yeah.
I can see why she's the one who writes the Jason Statham fan fiction.
Yeah.
That's smooth.
She actually writes all the jokes in any of the Squid Rugby stuff. Any jokes you found funny were written by her. Any jokes you didn't find funny were written by Jason Statham himself. I have nothing to do with them. So, shall we touch on the Samoa team? Because it's a really good Samoan side.
Yeah.
It's as strong a Samoa team as I've seen in my lifetime. As we said, like, this is the first time Wales ever beat a Samoan team at a World Cup. That, you know, in past they had always struggled. it was the bogey game, you know.
Yeah.
And also, I think because in the lead-up to this World Cup, there were constant replays of Wales losing to Fiji in 2007.
Yeah.
So it was kind of drilled into my head of like, oh, this is going to be, this is not going to go well. Especially with having watched them beat Australia a couple months earlier. So yeah, it's a really strong Samoan side.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think having Tuilagi playing against a 19-year-old is probably a good idea for them. And George North did particularly well. Mapasua as well, who we touched on him loads really on the previous episode about Samoa, but we basically talked about nobody else other than DJ Khaled. But other than Marnonu, I would have held Mapasua as the best inside centre in the world at this point.
Yeah.
And probably over the 5 minutes, five years, I was going to say, either side of this World Cup. The 5 minutes either side of this World Cup.
Yeah, the opening closing ceremonies,
yeah, exactly. Exactly, Mapasua was probably
the moment
best
New Zealand had the trophy, the moment Richie McCaw lifted it, Mapasua just went, no, I'm shit now, never mind.
Yeah.
Can't be bothered anymore, done it.
And I think Fatuali is the other one, who this was just before he signed for the Ospreys, he had such a good game. Other than there's one moment where he does his best Ben Youngs impression, passes the ball into touch from miles away.
And that is halfway across the pitch that he passes. Yeah. So even that's like, if you're going to be bad, be really bad. So he takes it to a new level there.
It is. Yeah. No, it's a spectacular, because he manages to miss about six players plus two Welsh players going for an intercept. And it's perfectly threaded. Like, it's so difficult to throw a pass that so precisely misses every single player on the pitch. It's honestly really impressive to see him do that and manage to get it in his touch.
I think it's Grant Nesbitt, but one of them goes, that was a good pass. I was there like, hey, it was, yeah, you're right. Looking back at it, it was. It went past everyone. Is it?
Maybe, because it's a Kiwi accent. He just had a big wee, and he just said, that was a good piss, but you couldn't tell.
Are we allowed to swear on this podcast?
Yeah, swear away. Yeah.
Please do. You're not allowed to not swear.
Oh, dear. Oh, God, I'm getting sacked. that's the most, because they beat Australia in the build-up.
Yeah.
Because obviously Australia were coming to the tournament as, like, red hot.
Yeah.
Favourite thing, but
the Tri-Nations.
And Queensland Reds had won the Super Rugby with, Quade Cooper and Genia ripping it up. So to beat them was something. Yeah. And then to assess, Levea happened.
Yes.
The kickoff is the most brilliant thing to me, because obviously you've got the Samoan haka, and it's like, right, okay, everyone's pumped up. Wales go into the corner to do their warm-ups. Samoa just stand there. And then you've just got Alan Rolone going, oh, there's a minute and a half. Yeah, we've got a minute and a half till kickoff.
There's a bit in that kind of, as you say, minute when, I think I said this in the previous Samoa game we did, but Mo Schwalga, I think, is the all-time Chris I've seen at leading one of those Pacific War dancers.
Yeah,
he's so good and he's so intense. And having watched a couple of, when I was trying to track down footage of this game, and I want to say incidentally, thank you very much to Peter Francis, who sent us a copy in the end.
Thank you, Peter Francis.
But
no relation of Neil.
No.
I'm sure Peter Francis actually condones ironing boards.
Yeah. He good. Loves them.
You
loves them.
Yeah,
better
he's a
be
massive fan of ironing boards.
Yeah,
but yeah. So we're kind of getting to the kickoff and so on, and there's then this really awkward moment where the Fox Sports coverage is trying to fill, because it was the Australian version we watched.
Yeah,
and I loved it. I loved them really awkwardly filling, and there's like 10 seconds of awkward silence, just dead air before one of them says, "We're now waiting for the broadcasters of the world to come back from ad breaks." And when there was, oh, right. And I think they didn't realise they were quite on air.
Yeah.
So they're all kind of filling. And one of them then begins to tell the famous joke, the joke that everyone says when Wales play Samoa, that when we lost to Western Samoa, just imagine we're playing the whole of Samoa. And all
thank
of the
you, Max
pundits,
Boyce.
Yeah, but so he bungles the joke, like he tells it badly, he stumbles over his words as he's saying it, and then all of the pundits laugh at it, and it's like hearing someone badly. It's like if you were a chicken that got run over, and someone went, "So there's a chicken, right?" And it was going to go from one side that it was going to cross the road,
right?
It wanted to get to the other side. If someone did that, right, your chicken that's been run over 2 weeks ago, and I'm so used to it I'm so used to it being painful and not funny and having heard it so many times that to hear an audience...
Well, the chicken crossing the road never stops being funny, I don't think. I think that's one of the classics. It's like the forward pass joke, you know?
That was great.
That is up there in sort of the top, like, top three jokes ever.
Can we play that VT back in, please? Is it that sort of show? I don't know. We got a clip? I'm glad you chose to, like, mangle the chicken joke. I thought it was going to be like Eddie Murphy's Raw. You're going to sort of start reeling that off. It's going to be like, this is going to be insensitive.
I really hope that in future, that eventually that becomes the go-to joke kids tell each other, is Eddie Murphy reference.
Your mum's so fat. It's like, oh no, here we go. But yeah, I thought, before they said, oh, it's to get back from the adverts, I just assumed they committed to playing a Black Eyed Peas song. Yes. And we're going to damn well finish the Black Eyed Peas song before kickoff.
Mm. They do that every game in this World Cup, which is, alarming.
Yeah, a song that was 2 years old at this point. So, you know, it's not even like, oh, it's the sound of the summer.
Yeah, but it's New Zealand. So, you know, having watched Super Rugby Aotearoa, the most recent song they've played is Rock DJ. So I'm not expecting, you know, much, much more recent. I can't wait for New Zealand to get Girls Aloud sometime next season.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, though, there's probably, like, an equivalent podcast happening in New Zealand where they're talking about the 2015 World Cup and they say, when are they going to discover songs that aren't Mr. Brightside?
Yeah.
You know, so...
No, not playing a lot of Lord.
Yeah.
that was my best Kiwi accent, that, actually. that was more Christchurch in England than New Zealand. We'll put the laugh track in there, please.
We were beginning to touch on it, but to vaguely steer this in some sort of direction, not very well. I'm not going to pretend I'm doing a good job. But yeah, so I had this noted down. I felt like this was one of those games where 29 out of 30 starting players, or it was 22-man squad at this point, wasn't it? So 44 out of... No, 43 out of 44 players had a good game. And the other one was Lavea, who was also on the pitch.
Shit, wasn't he?
Because this is like, it's a great occasion, this, because I think it's the only time since rugby turned professional that 2CPC hasn't been in a Samoan 23.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't get it, because the thing is, I can remember when I was looking at the lineups before doing this game, I can remember I was just going through and then I just wrote, okay, Fotuoli, PC. And then I looked back up and was like, hang on a second. They actually picked Cesar Lavea for a game that wasn't against like one of the Minnows. I remember him always being shit, but my God, do you live up to that?
So, 2CPC was injured. I remember this being a big talking point in the week, and I'd forgotten
he pulled out before the game, didn't he?
Yeah, the night before. I remember watching Scrum 5 and Rick O'Shea discussing... You know, he obviously didn't know who either of the Samoan 10s were, but saying, so this PC gives them more structure was his phrase. He kept coming back to because he'd read that.
Funny enough, Grant Fox called him Pissy.
he did throw fits, I suppose. Oh, he did. He did have moments in supermarkets where he'd just start having a tantrum.
What a killer. Grant Fox.
So, as you say, right from the kickoff, as you say, like, everyone gets pumped up, and then, of course, to say a little bit.
It's like so anticlimactic, and if you're going to do it on the first kickoff, because everyone's there like, right, adrenaline's pumping. It's in touch.
Yeah.
We'll come back for a scrum. The only person who likes it is Mike Phillips, because he gets to do that lovely scrum half thing of, I'm going to run to halfway and pretend to take a quick line out, but I'm never going to do it, because no one would ever do it.
Someday TJ Perenara is going to do it, and he is the only player I can see.
Yeah.
I think Ben Youngs will do it from one touchline to the other.
That's his Sistine Chapel.
As long as he did it on the right wing, you know that Johnny May is going to be on the left wing, just running around anyway. So it's like it could come off. It genuinely could, because he'll chase anything.
Johnny May running sideways again because he's just gone back to his old habits, like a dog.
Yeah.
I've missed that. I've missed Johnny May running sideways and being a chicken in a cage.
Who crossed the road sometimes?
Johnny May being possessed by a chicken and crossing the pitch.
It all comes full circle.
Oh, and it, like an egg, like a chicken's egg, which is not a circle.
It's a classic.
So, Lavea, he's shit, isn't he?
He really is.
Bloody hell. What a game. He's not great. And then he's turned into a doormat, isn't he, about 10 minutes later by George North. which yeah. suggests.
Jamie Roberts got the upper hand over him a few times as well. And to be fair, Jamie Roberts didn't shy away from any collisions, and neither did Andy Powell. And the
I love Andy Powell coming on is that I just loved it because he came on and it's like watching a club player play in international rugby. And I mean that in a nice way, because there's he just doesn't care. He just doesn't, you know, there's a kickoff where Charteris is clearly called for it. So there's someone lifts Charteris. Andy Powell just jumps in front of him, just jumps over the top of Charteris, knocks it on in the air. And it's just there like, well, I was going to catch it. I wanted to catch it, really. He just carries every time he carries as well. He tries to turn it into a maul, so he just turns. He's there like, come on, boys, everyone in. It's like that classic like club player where he's like, right, I'll carry it, I'll turn. 13 men in, right, and we'll just roll them down the pitch.
There's one particular carry when Andy Powell's just come on, where my original thought is, well, Andy Powell's either brave or he's stupid. Hang on, I know which of those two he is.
Yeah.
And also, when he presents the ball in rucks, it's the most over-enthusiastic thing. It's like he's like scoring a try each time. He just hammers the ball down at the back of the ruck. As though like Warren Gatland's there going, that's got gold star for effort. That's great. I love it. Although, to be fair, there's a good chance they have a board in the dressing room with like... They obviously had the Sam's dry wall in there. You know, how many days you've gone without drinking. So I reckon they had, you know, like a primary school sort of board. You know, like a gold star for every time you've presented the ball at the ruck with a lot of enthusiasm.
Andy Powell played for Wales on the basis of gold stars. That's what it was.
You never know. This was post golf buggy.
Yeah,
Of course.
He basically disappeared until the warm ups. He comes in, scores a try against Argentina. And then manages to keep a lid on it in celebrating that game afterwards, and gets himself just about to the World Cup. Where I think he pretty much, you know, he doesn't come on against Samoa because, no, against South Africa. He just come on against Samoa. He doesn't come on against South Africa because no one can trust him.
Yeah.
But he's so much fun to watch even when he's not doing anything.
Yeah, he's great, isn't he? Yeah.
I also realised...
He's always at the wrong side of a rock.
Yeah.
He's just lying there. Like, Kaan Fatuili must have been sick of the sight of him because he's just there every time. Just lying there. Oh, it's just fantastic.
Other thing I realised when I was just writing down notes is... It feels impossible to call him Powell. He's either Andy Powell or he's Powley. Yeah. You can't call him Powell. It just doesn't sound right. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't sit right at all. Like I don't feel well when I say it.
Yeah. And a push Andy, you know.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oi, what are you doing? That's the other name you call him.
Yeah. Wait, put some clothes on. Yeah.
What a card.
There is a huge hit he makes on, or the other way around, I suppose, Mapasua on Powell as well, where the two just run into each other, and it's almost like, bam, flat into each other, which actually reminds me of another shit thing that Lavea does, which is, at one point, Jamie Roberts comes charging at him into the line, you know, off a line out, quick ball, and they just send Roberts right up the middle. And instead of kind of hanging back and waiting for support, Lavea just runs straight at Roberts completely upright, just in a straight line into him.
What was he expecting?
And then at the last second, he tries to, like, put his arms out to try and wrap around him, and Roberts just knocks him flat on his back. It's like, what were you trying to do? And you think, okay, that's stupid. And then a few minutes later, right, where was his next lineup? They do the same thing with George North, and he does the same thing, and he runs straight at North.
Yeah. Oh, the North just, one is just horrible.
Yeah.
Because he just sits him down and it goes down in installments.
Like, yeah.
George North, he was a cheat code in that World Cup.
Yeah.
Bear in mind as well, Jamie Roberts had already flattened Mapasua once on a carry. And like, people don't just do that. Like, he properly sat him down, sent him flying. And like, Mapasua is like, he's one of the two centres that's bigger than Jamie Roberts at this World Cup.
Yeah,
and he managed to sit him down. So imagine what he could do to Lavea if he was trying.
I just think what fly half looks at their own like inside centre getting, you know, sat down by a centre and goes, "I'll have a bit of that."
Yeah. Don't worry, Slater. I'll show you how it's done.
Most fly halves are going, right, boys. I'll defend on the blind side winger.
Yeah.
Do you want to know what club Lavea was at the time?
Go on.
Clermont.
Of course he was.
As in the French Clermont.
Yeah. No, he made his own Clermont. He went to start his own team. He signed for Clermont on Rugby 08 just started playing as the Hat, listed them as his club, applied to the Samoan Union saying, I play for Claremont, I made a custom player on Rugby Challenge.
I was trying to think what his name would have been on Rugby 08, because obviously all the Pacific Island boys were unlicensed. They had some great names. I'm trying to think, like, there was Nicky Large.
Nicky Large. I always enjoyed that.
Well done, EA Sports, you've done it again.
I went back and played quite a lot of Rugby 08 a few weeks ago.
Don't rub it in. Some of us haven't the ability to play Rugby 08.
Oh, it's great. I've just kept the PS2 plugged in and I've gone back to it every now and again. It is glorious.
My favourite ever player that we've had is, and Robbie would know this, but that we've had when playing the rugby games and stuff, like custom player, is that we've played many careers on Rugby Challenge. And it was on Rugby Challenge 2, so it was probably like our seventh career. Bear in mind, you know, you can do 13 seasons, then you have to restart as a different club.
Yeah.
And basically, once we're playing as the Reds against the Western Force, and we just saw on the opposition, there was a player who, there was a glitch that had made this player about 2 foot tall. Genuinely, like he was minuscule and like played open side flanker. And just did everything the same as everybody else. But the graphic was really, really tiny. So and we eventually went on and signed this player.
As Andrew Lopez. So he was just clinging on to the scrum and he was floating in midair because his legs weren't long enough to hit the ground. And when we signed him, we then put him into like in a hooker and he'd be reaching out with his arms out and he wouldn't touch either of the props. Like it wasn't just he couldn't get his arms around them. They were nowhere. Yeah, he was just floating in the middle of this scrum. It was just as though they didn't have a hooker in, and he just had this like dragonfly in the middle.
I've got a video on my phone of him kicking a goal where he stood all the way back, and then he just propels towards the ball because he can't take enough steps towards it because that's just what the graphic is. So he just zooms towards the ball, and it flies over.
And he's the same size as the ball.
Yeah,
but the ball shrinks and then grows so he can take the kick.
It's stories like this that fills me with confidence that Rugby Challenge 4 coming out later this month is going to be a massive success for the rugby video gaming scene.
Yeah.
Oh, if you can choose to make an Alejandro Lopez that's tiny, like we put the other thing to keep on it, putting him in a line out, and they don't just lift him, they literally throw him in the air because he's so short. And he'll then catch a ball bigger than him. The ball will shrink temporarily, then he'll drop it off the top and it'll grow again.
That is incredible.
I'll try and find the pictures and videos. I think I have them on my phone still of him playing, and they're remarkable. Him doing a number 8 pickup is brilliant as well.
Yes.
Seeing the rest of the pack briefly shrink as he picks the ball up.
And I haven't seen any other record of this glitch ever. I think only ever happened to us.
Yeah.
And it was one very particular player that happened to spawn on one career, and I think we saw his name again on another career and he wasn't tiny anymore.
Yeah.
But it was so much fun when we had him. It was really funny.
Yeah. We miss you, Alessandro Lopez. Come back.
And yet he would have been a better 10 for Samoa, even if he was playing that size. He would have done a better tackle on Jamie Roberts if he just literally clung onto one ankle.
Can't argue with that. Cannot argue with that at all.
Yeah. Shall we talk about the 2 tries in this game?
Oh, we probably should.
If we must.
Yeah.
I mean, the in-stadium playlist is probably more interesting.
Is there anything else on the stadium playlist you'd like to touch on?
Let me get my Shazam up. I did Shazam it. It's just mainly country pop, which is incredible. And songs I've never heard of, which are just...
Go on, list them for us.
Only the class... Oh, to be fair, only 2 of them worked. One of them was Anyway by Armand van Helden, which was played when Adam Jones was... taking a break and having some ice applied to his leg. And the other one was Smile by Uncle Cracker. Get that on your Spotify, kids. Which Google classifies as country pop / country rock.
Nice.
So, nice little section there for the podcast.
Yeah, thank you. No moves like Jagger this week.
That
must have happened.
Yeah, because it was everywhere in 2011. Yeah,
you couldn't escape. Even in New Zealand, you couldn't escape it.
Is it really that old?
Yeah. 2011.
God, where's
we're getting old.
Yeah.
The classic. Lot of us.
Oh, death comes for us all, doesn't it?
And death comes via, except for Mick Jagger, ironically.
Yeah, Keith Richards still going, so it's hopeful.
Yeah. The more he smokes, the longer he survives.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah. So the first try scored on halftime by Peronese to just set sheer Welsh panic.
Yeah.
I mean, Samoa have been battering away at the line for some time.
Yeah, it's about 15 phases at that point, isn't it?
Yeah. They almost blow it a couple of times, but just about hold out, or just about keep hold of the ball, or regain it. And then, eventually, so they sling it out, and Mapasua kind of takes the ball in. And he does so well to just buy time, because he just stays on his feet, and he requires an extra couple of Welsh defenders to come in. And allows the Samoan forwards time to reset and get around the corner, including Peronese. Back when getting around the corner was a thing.
Yeah.
But including Peronese, you know, so they all reset. And they wouldn't have been able to if Mapasua hadn't done such a great job of just staying on his feet and just buying time for the other players on his team.
My favourite thing about this try is that as Fotuoli passes the ball wide, he does like a skip pass and skips out Lavea because, you know, it would require Lavea being competent if he passed to him. And Lavea, I'm not sure who knows this, Lavea like then motions his hands forward as if he's doing like a flick on.
Nice.
As if he's to try and register himself the assist. And he doesn't make contact with the ball at all. But Fotuoli is just not passing to him because why would he? And Lavea's trying to play it off like, oh, great hands from Lavea. He's trying what he's trying to get the commentators to say, but he just isn't anywhere near the ball. And he's just trying to play it off like he's done this fantastic flick pass.
You should do that thing like in football when someone does a really good assist, they celebrate on their own. Everyone's run over to the goal scorer and they're just like, yeah, I've done a great assist there, boys. Love to see that. Yeah, the other thing is obviously George North coming out of the line for that. He looks like he does a good job of shutting it down, but then you don't expect Peronese to just sort of come back in, sort of step back in and score from there. So, you know,
yeah,
it's one of those. It's North sort of overcompensating a bit, and just it's a bit like Anscombe for the was it Pickhamalls?
Pickhamalls in France last year.
It's a bit similar to that, isn't it? Just the way he's done it.
Yeah, and it was very George North. I was going to say at the time, but that implies he's sorted it out much. But he has this habit of misreading or making a good read but not making the tackle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he scrambles really well to get... Because he sort of... Yeah. Yeah, it's a bouncing ball. So he comes out of the line and then it's a bouncing ball, you know, steps back in. But I thought he then makes a really good sort of cover, but then he just misses the tackle slightly. I think it's Sam Warburton coming across, isn't it? Who doesn't quite... Because he gets a tap on the head from one of the Samoans. Which they Fox Sport then show in super slow motion.
Sam does make a brilliant try-saving tackle on Paul Williams in the lead-up, though, in the kind of burst that leads to this.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. And he properly kind of, from nowhere, from completely outside of Paul Williams' eye line, he couldn't have seen or felt him until he's being dragged to ground suddenly and very, you know, quickly and brutally by Sam. It's like almost WWE-ish in the way he just kind of like contorts Paul Williams' body round and...
A second try-saving tackle, probably match-saving tackle, to be honest, where Tuolangi fends off Halfpenny. And, like, not many people just clean off beat Halfpenny, you know?
but if you're Tuolangi, that's not remarkable, is it?
Sure,
beating a man
Halfpenny
size.
This World Cup compared to the sort of... I think he bulked up a lot afterwards, but this, he still does look, like, tiny.
Yeah.
God,
yeah.
The amount of eggs he must have eaten between now and the Six Nations...
Yeah.
Talking of eggs, got a joke for you boys. No,
it's round, full circle, like an egg.
But no,
is that late on when Paul Williams runs it from his own?
Yeah,
22. Yeah, because he's going to kick it. And he looks up, he sees Kevin Jenkins and Andy Pound. He thinks I'm going to go around these, and he just breaks. Then he breaks down the left, doesn't he? But Warburton just comes across.
Yeah, and he beats Halfpenny, beats Shane Williams, and Warburton smashes him. And gets straight back to his feet and wins the ball, wins a penalty turnover. And it was that point where there was probably 8 minutes to go or something. That was the moment where it felt like Wales had won the game.
Yeah. It's that, and then a few minutes after that, we have Geoffrey Jenkins comes in and makes a turnover. And Samoa still have a chance after that. They still have a go. But Geoffrey makes such an important turnover just as Samoa wrestling
momentum. Geoffrey was good, wasn't he?
I know.
Like, to say this was his first game in, what, a year or something? Mm. And it was straight in, international. Playing against Samoa is never fun. As like, it's one of those games that you know all the Welsh boys would have been hurting after. But Gethin was blooming good.
I don't think Gethin's ever had fun. just quickly, no. I don't think he looks like someone who's ever had fun. That's his charm and his appeal.
I'd be fascinated to listen to a Gethin Jenkins DJ set. Because that's his big passion outside of rugby, is he loves DJing.
Yeah,
Gethin Jenkins loves DJing. And I don't know why.
So does Steve Davis, the snooker player. But then he's
get them
like,
together, collab.
Steve Davis, the snooker player, is into like proper like 80s techno indie grunge.
Okay, here's
Steve Davis.
Absolutely. Here's a plot twist. What if Stadium Playlist put together by the one and only DJ Mellon?
I think it sounds likely.
Can laughter needed there?
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought it was an incomplete sentence. I thought there was more. That's why I stopped.
Yeah. That's the kind of joke I like to make. You know, I like it to feel like I've just given up. When actually,
do you
want
to know the kind of joke I like to make?
It's about chickens and the road.
It is.
No, it's about your mama. It's a good one. It's about good your one. Mama and the neck. It's Eddie Murphy. Raw.
So, guess.
I've never seen
Raw,
so I'm just guessing. I don't know what he's... Most of my cultural references are things I've never seen or experienced.
Yeah. Oh, that's the internet, though, isn't it? Yeah. You grew up having seen a 2-minute clip of it, or having read that it's the most successful concert movie of all time, that Eddie Murphy role.
Imagine being
all
me. I present a film podcast and have seen Wallace and Gromit: The Wrong Trousers and pretty much nothing else.
It's like my English A levels. This just like, did you read Cold Comfort Farm?
Yeah,
I read it. Yeah, To Kill a Mockingbird. Yeah. Pretty sure Boo Rally and Scout end up together at the end. Which apparently is not the plot.
Do you know what? He didn't even kill the mockingbird. It was only left in intensive care.
But Gregory Peck's a fantastic actor, I gotta say. Gregory Peck, well done.
I'll leave this in the podcast, but I didn't read a single book for my entire literature degree that I have.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Degree. I just GCSE and A level with me, yeah.
No, I did that in GCSE and A level and then thought, I can carry this on for 3 years and challenge myself, and I came up with a 2-1 in just bullshitting.
It's better than a Desmond.
Anyway, yeah, humble brag.
My equivalent when I was in A level was that on every single exam I did, I lied. So on the first exam I came to, I couldn't think of... So I did at A level. I picked chemistry, but I dropped it after like 2 weeks because it's not
medical.
It's not fun, is it?
It's no. That was a mistake, but it fitted with the other options.
Did you lie on the chemistry exams?
I dropped chemistry before I got to the exam.
I was going to say, if you lied on chemistry, you're doing well. Just like convincing the exam board. Well, actually, I think you'll find this is the correct science.
Actually, I think you'll find there's no such thing as alkalines.
Did you ever write, I don't like that question?
Yes,
on your exams.
Yeah. I just ask, I was locked down in Argentina and be like, what? What are you talking about?
What is lockdown? It's like, you'll see.
I did government and politics, English language, and psychology. And
I suppose
on every
lion's quite fitting for the first one, isn't it?
Exactly.
Ooh, satire.
Exactly.
Biting satire there.
This was my thing. My first exam was a politics exam. And at one point, I wanted to make a point, and I knew, you know, because you learn the structure of how you write an exam best and so on. And I knew the best thing to do was to use a quote or use some kind of evidence. And I just thought to myself, well, I haven't got anything, but there's no way they can have read every single book.
Like it.
So I wrote, as Cuthbert said in 1992, and then put in this quote that I made up, because I figured Cuthbert was after Alex Cuthbert, because he just got into the Welsh team about this time, but this
makes sense.
The Six Nations, exactly. And it felt to me, I kind of cycled through names in my head, and obviously, you know, the Welsh team is the obvious place to go for names.
Sure.
And it felt like a name, there will be enough Cuthberts out there that it's hard to look up, but it's not like, if I'd just written Jones or Smith or something, they'd go, well, he just made it up.
Suspicious,
yeah. So it felt specific, but not so specific that it's the only one out there. If I'd written Faletau wrote in 2008.
Or Talaufau.
So,
yes. In Grand Fox's world.
Yeah. So that I started doing that. And on every exam afterwards, for my entire A-level, both AS and A2, I lied and I put in a quote by Cuthbert.
Nice.
And I expanded on, like, and it was in my last exam, was the psychology one. The first sentence I began, as Cuthbert said in such and such year, I just went balls out, all for it. I also, at one point in the politics exam, just said, as Hillary Clinton once said, I just made up a quote. I thought there's absolutely no way they can verify that.
Practically emasculated your, like, politics. Because you've been thinking, I've never heard of this Cuthbert, but he seems quite prolific, doesn't he? Just probably pack it all in.
Yeah. Didn't you quote Batman in an exam?
I did. Oh, so wow. This was the other thing. I mentioned this in passing in a video once. But I did my exams about the time The Dark Knight Rises came out. So I just watched the Dark Knight Batman Begins, like the night before or a couple of nights before. I watched them back to back, I remember. And I said, as Wayne said in 2005,
wow.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy. Which is a quote from Batman Begins, which came out in 2005 and is said by Bruce Wayne. And I got away with it. I then got that paper back and had a look at it and they'd given me marks for it.
No.
Incredible.
Yeah, so I got That's marks phenomenal. For quoting Batman Begins.
I've never got that far. I've managed to slip in Partridge lines into my piece.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, I've got a few references in.
What Partridge quote applies to an exam?
Not in my pieces now. Not in writing. Not in my, I never got anything to make. Well, you know, as Gandhi once said, you know, rugby is a hooligan's game played by gentlemen. But no, I've never got anything into exams. I don't think. I mean, everything was a lie because I hadn't read any of the books.
It's worth giving you some more credit, Robbie, as well for Cuthbert, because Cuthbert's legacy didn't end at you, did it? Like, you curated this character. And do you want to elaborate on that?
Oh, no, I was just going to pick up on you having not read the books but quoting Alan Partridge. Just, you know, it's not Bravo 2-0 by Andy McNab, is it? There's an Alan Partridge reference.
What's your favourite part of To Kill a Mockingbird? I'd say the best of To Kill a Mockingbird.
The best of William Shakespeare. Why did Sylvia Plath kill herself? Was she not very good? okay, so, yeah, Cuthbert, yeah, I think, you know, teachers encouraged Cuthbert to be continued using, I believe, is where you're going with that.
Because
it became so effective when they started asking for my... Because I told my teachers I was doing this, they started asking for my papers back just to check whether it was working, and consistently I was getting marks for Cuthbert. And so they started encouraging, if you're in a real pinch, write Cuthbert. So I'm sure he's been found out by now, and I'm sure there's examiners somewhere across the board. They got some panicked email saying, if you see the word Cuthbert, don't trust it. A bit like
Can you retrospectively grade papers? Examining boards now, just like, everyone's got D's. It's like, oh.
You're going to get Lance Armstronged. And,
yes. Strip me of my A-levels.
Have your A-level removed. But no, I then, because of course I'm 2 years younger than you, I then went on and used Cuthbert in all of my A-level exams, like as an homage to you and the way that you used it and, you know, passed your exams with it or whatever. And then eventually to prove that, and yes, I'm slightly embarrassed to admit that I did a sociology A-level. But the reason why is because, again, I could bullshit my way through it. And Cuthbert was a big friend of mine during that because it's not a real subject. And in my final, the best exam I've ever performed on was the A2 sociology exam, which I only used one real theorist. Thanks to your advice, Robbie. I had no idea what I was doing going into it. It works. It worked anyway.
You know, it's like if this was a spy movie, right at the beginning, I'd be recruited by the CIA because I broke the system and I was innovative and I found a way through it. And frankly, right, okay, and this is like, I don't want to get on a too serious a point, but the current education syllabus, the whole curriculum, is built around passing exams rather than actually learning anything. And it was much like Madness learned to bend, not break the rules when they were in school. I learned how to pass exams rather than how to actually learn things. So I picked up some stuff about politics and English and what have you. But mostly, I just learned how to cheat exams. And that's become what I was good at. So really, I did what the system taught me to do. And that's why we should reform education.
It feels like your whole early life was basically Catch Me If You Can with Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks.
Yeah, only there is no Tom Hanks.
I'm just forging exam questions, and you know, you'll be brought on board soon by the exam board to sort of sniff out other people quoting now sort of exiled Welsh rugby players. As Priestland said.
I'm trying to think. There was a really specific, like, European player that I quoted in my sociology exam. Yeah,
it's got to be Gorgotza.
It was on that level. It was on that level. And
Sharikin at Cancer wrote.
Yeah. No, I have a feeling that I used, like, something really specific. Like, I quoted, like, Hendre Fori in my exam or someone like that. There was a really specific player that I targeted.
I can't wait for them to Google this source. Like, oh, this sounds really interesting. I want to look it up. And they get a video compilation from Ruddy Data of him having a nightmare against Romania.
Pretty good sociologist, though.
Yeah. And he won international caps. It is actually, because we had a nightmare finding this game, pretty much the only footage of it on the internet is a compilation of,
I love Ruddy Data's videos. Just because it's...
Should we get him on this podcast?
I don't know him. I don't know who runs the account, but it's just an amazing commitment to basically trying to ruin Ron Nogara's life.
Yeah.
It's just there, like, you know, any game, you'll just dig up something like, well, Ron O'Gara had a shocker against the Waratahs in 2001. It's like, yeah, of course he did. He got, you know, pulverised. But
he got assaulted. Well.
But yeah, I just love it. Because, yeah, it's glorifying professional players making mistakes and forgetting they're human beings. And for me, that's the spirit of rugby. That's rugby values. That and James Hook being booed every time he kicked in this game. Yeah. Him and Priestland got a... Jeez, the crowd.
Just mentioning James Hook, my ongoing nemesis, as Sean Holly likes to remind me that one time I spoke to him.
Careful now, I love Hookie. I'm best mates with him.
Oh yeah, no, he was one of my very first favourite players.
He's my best mate. I'm not his best mate, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and so James Hook at one point takes the ball at fullback where he was playing. And he begins charging full pelt upfield, and he throws a dummy with such force that it caused him to lose his footing and fall over. Which made me laugh out loud, because it's such a James Hook moment. He then falls over, taking his next kick of goal as well, before they give it to Priestland.
Hookie at fullback in that World Cup. I mean, I spoke to him quite recently about it. It was like Gatland knew that he had to be in the team somewhere. He just didn't know where. Like, he played him that Six Nations. He played fly half, didn't he, at Murrayfield?
Yeah,
which went all right actually. That was a decent. Yeah, I thought it was a good game. But then the next game he's like, oh, I'll play you in centre, James. He always seemed to play him at fullback for the Pacific Islanders games. Like 2009, he played him against
Samoa.
Yeah, Samoa when they wore that awful yellow kit.
Yeah, we were there.
I quite like the yellow kit.
I was there. And we went down.
What if we met? What if there's like a flashback sequence now? We sat next to each other.
Because Halfpenny scored in the first few minutes, didn't he?
Yeah.
And
First few tries. That's Canada.
It was Canada, yeah. No,
it was Canada. Halfpenny. No, Halfpenny did score.
He scored in the corner. I think it was a cross kick or something like that.
Yellow card. Sorry, yellow kit. Was the other game they played in it?
Yeah, Canada. Actually scored twice in that game, didn't they?
Yeah. Sorry, you know, he did score a cross kick.
We were sort of travelling down from Mid Wales on a trip, and obviously got stuck in traffic outside Cardiff. So we missed that try. So then we saw 70-odd minutes of pretty awful rugby, sort of, Dwayne Peel's international career sort of slip away from him, sadly. Yeah, and then I think, was it Mapasu who scored the intercept that day?
Yes, it was.
It was.
It all ties together.
Yeah. I can't believe we met that day, man.
Well, it's mad, because I think we sort of put in place the plans for this podcast that day. It's sad it's taken 11 years to get it off the ground, but you know, good things come to those who wait.
We're going to do a retrospective for the World Cup taking place in 2 years' time. Yeah.
We're going to talk about all the World Cups in the future.
Yeah. We're going to need to wait at least, I think, 8 years before people are interested in hearing about that World Cup.
Sure. Which they will be.
Yeah.
I distinctly remember saying, guys, I think 2019 is going to be your year.
Yeah.
Just what I'm like.
Wow, I can't believe I'm going to meet Squidge Rugby.
You're like, what's Squidge?
The best thing was, when you first watched this game, Ben, you wrote down, Oh, that's why they call it a forward pass. It's done by a forward. And then 9 years later, you finally got to make it.
Well, you know me. I like to, you know, plan my jokes out in advance.
Sure.
Apart from Eddie Murphy's Raw.
I believe you coined the joke, why did the chicken cross the road? Am I right in saying that?
I mean, yeah, it was basically, it was a failed Seinfeld parody. And it ended up being why did the chicken cross the road? But I'm very proud of it.
Even though
it's, you know, it's failed.
Yeah, but people don't give you enough credit for inventing that joke.
It's big in Russia. Big in Russia, which is I'm very proud of.
This is a what tangent, isn't? But did anyone see Taya Gajev's Instagram story yesterday?
Big in Russia. Is that your...
He's a big Russian man. But it was just loads of clips of him up a mountain with no one for miles on a horse.
Was he topless?
And he just, yeah, good. He'd gone topless up a mountain, and it looked cold on a horse. I was like, this is what I want for my International Sevens. Why isn't Michael Hooper doing
this? The verb to Putin.
Yes.
I Putin, you Putin, we Putin.
Aren't you glad that you have a medium which you can ask two people? Has anybody seen Taya Gajev's Instagram story?
Do that in the pub, you get kicked out.
It reminds me of when I was in, like, under 16s, and I probably mentioned this on a future episode, but the Argentine winning try against Scotland in this World Cup.
Amorosino,
oh, exactly.
I love him.
And that was what I said when I was playing later that day, because I was still playing, like, under 16s or whatever, and everyone was talking about that try, and I referred to him as being Lucas Gonzalez Amorosino. And everyone just kind of stopped and looked at me, and it was like a beat as we just heard the clock ticking, and they're kind of like, why would you know that guy's name? Why do you know this player who isn't Toby Flood?
Yeah.
And that was the moment I realised I'm going to need to track down that guy I met at the Samoa game 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And finally do this podcast.
Yeah.
And
what can I say?
what can I say that Eddie Murphy didn't say first?
I just watched Taya Gajev's story, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was indeed up mountains on a horse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was good for him.
Good for him.
Right. Anything else about the game? We did Shane's try. Shane's try.
Shane's try.
Oh, we should mention Shane's try. Right, here we go. This is where the good stuff happens. Halfpenny.
Yes.
Love him. His scrum cap is just not worth the hassle, is it? I mean, for starters, I don't know what scrum cap he's wearing, because when he comes on, you notice he's got like a black belt on the back. It's like ribbons that probably go down to his ankles.
Mm.
Like proper ninja stuff. Which I imagine is what he asked for when he went into Lovell or wherever these boys shop. He's like, I'd like a ninja scrum cap. But yeah, it's the fact that he has to adjust it when he has his head taken off. I just love that.
Yeah.
I lied, Will. I haven't got 20 minutes on it. I lied on Twitter. I said I had a tight 20-minute set.
Well,
but I don't.
You know, we've all seen Eddie Murphy, of course, with that 20-minute set on Lee Halfpenny.
He did.
So really, he just steals your material.
Yeah,
anyway.
You know.
Yeah.
What is the deal with scrum backs wearing scrum caps?
Yeah.
They're not in a scrum. Point.
You know, they always said Seinfeld was a show about nothing?
Yeah, this...
Really, apart from that one episode where it was very much about Lee Halfpenny's scrum cap?
I think so.
that full half hour they did on it.
Yeah.
Where Julia Louis-Dreyfus tries on the hat.
She's such a a wonderful physical actress.
What antics. What japes.
A lot of shenanigans in that show. Of course, the plural of shenanigai.
Yeah.
Who is related to the singer, yeah. Jamiroquai.
I was going to say, shenanigai was playing for Tonga in this World Cup, wasn't he?
Yeah, shenanigai wears a big hat and sings.
Yeah. Right, so
yeah,
Shane Williams,
lovely
try.
Yeah, great try, isn't it?
Levea does a shit kick, which Lee Halfpenny takes. At which point, the entire Samoan team decide to try and high tackle him.
Yeah, I think it was the only kick that sort of Halfpenny was underneath that day, because every other one he was having a scramble back for it. But yeah, it's classic, you know, chase, take their heads off. You know, we're talking New Zealand 1973, there, barbarians. Little reference for JPR Williams if you're listening. gives it to Foxy, and it's, I swear someone said Foxy had done a lot of those passes that year where he'd sort of found the grass, but it worked out. I can't remember any others. What other tries did he
on Twitter? Yeah, it was, he did a similar thing against Argentina. He threw a bad pass and then he put through the kick that led to the Argentine try on his first start in Cardiff in 2009, that same autumn we were just talking about.
Oh yeah, he got charged down,
we didn't
he?
Meet then. Yeah.
I wasn't at that
their
game.
Grub was on as well.
Yeah, I think we met. I was hospitality that day.
Nice.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't there.
No. We were at the pub together, watching classic, it together, weren't we?
Classic. Yeah, lads at the pub in 2009. I was 13 and heavily drinking at that point.
Like sort of
deal with the burdens of life.
Yeah.
Heavily drinking. So... Yeah, I can't think of any other sort of Foxy.
But
I remember. I always remember the pass he put out. Ireland 2013 in Cardiff. He put it behind Cuthbert.
Yes. Yeah,
that was a stick to beat with him. That, like, oh, Foxy can't pass.
He sort that out, didn't he?
Yeah.
He always, his problem was he'd always slow down before contact, meaning that the man could always just drift off him. So, but he doesn't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So
but then, like, you look at 2017, he does the same stuff, and he sets up Steph Evans in the Pro 12 final by doing that same sort of give and go, and he does the same thing with Elliot Daly in the Lions.
Yeah, and it became, he worked on his game so nicely, and he knew, I think right from about the moment he got into that Welsh team in about 2009, he knew what the weaknesses in his game were, and he's worked on them slowly ever since. So by this point, he'd worked on the fact that he knew people said he didn't pass, and he was just the great runner off the ball, and he developed a passing game, and he wasn't always the most accurate, but he was still aware enough to give them, even if it, as you say, it felt like such a Wales moment. The Harpenny goes right through from the entire Samoan team just attacking him, and he as we kind of like, he adjusts his scrum cap as he's running
constantly, doesn't realize someone's trying to ankle tap him at that point, and he's got, you know, one hand on his head carrying a ball. Like, if he'd got ankle tapped, he's just, his head's in the turf because he's got no arms to sort of break his fall there, because he's adjusting his scrum cap.
It's also one of the most famous instances of the Harpenny twirl, as I've always called it.
Mm.
That thing he does when he catches a high ball, and as someone comes to hit him, he does a little pirouette, and then somehow comes out the other side.
He's like a pinball.
And he did a couple of times here. Yeah.
It's like a pinball. It's madness.
Just he rolls right out of the tackle, goes through, fixes the man, gives it to Foxy. Foxy then tries to fix the fullback and
with his mouth
give
open.
It...
Flattered.
Of course. He's Foxy. Come on, goes without saying. Tries to give it back to Harpenny and completely butchers the pass. And watching it live, and then again watching back here.
I don't think he butchered it. I think he meant to do it. Gonna go on record. It's perfect. He knew where Shane was. It's that classic.
You don't see Shane.
Classic Marnon and banked pass.
I remember watching it live and thinking it completely been blown because I didn't see Shane. Yeah. I couldn't see Shane. Well,
neither did Paul Williams because he just absolutely clatters Lee Harpenny from behind.
Yeah.
Just takes him out, and there's just Shane just like, pops up.
And it's the most Shane Williams thing, is knowing when Wales have blown it and to just pop up and save the day.
Yeah.
And it basically became what he did.
The only way it could have been more Shane, it was if when he went into the in-goal area, he thought, I'm going to step another four or five defenders.
Yeah. Like that Argentina game
he made that a habit, didn't he? Yeah, that's when, was it Gethin?
Nugget shoved him over the line.
Yeah, shoved him over the line, got sick of him.
Yeah. There's another point where Shane makes another break and offloads to Jamie Roberts. And once again, Paul Williams completely clatters him. And like, it's so rare to see a fullback make such a dominant tackle on somebody just one-on-one, especially somebody of Jamie Roberts' size. But he completely ends him.
Yeah, Paul Williams made a lot of big tackles in that game.
So Paul Williams wasn't built like the rest of the Samoan backline. Like, weirdly, he was somehow the smallest man in that backline. Apart from Levea, but he's shit, so he doesn't count.
Not in that backline.
So Paul Williams was 6'2" and 222 pounds, smallest man in the backline. And yet he very much played like all the others. You know, he'd kind of learned that this is the way you play rugby. You clatter into everything, and you batter everything you can, and you throw yourself into everything. And he was better than I remember, because I remember him just being his very confrontational fullback. Yeah. Rather than being good. And actually, it was quite nice to see him really covering the ground and really doing all of the actual fullback things that you need to do as a fullback.
Basically both fullbacks in this game, Paul Williams and Lee Harpenny, basically defy physics in what they do.
Yeah.
Which is largely why I dropped physics.
I dropped
it at AS. I couldn't get my head around it. I was there like...
It's Paul Williams'
fault. My teacher's there going, no, this is physics. I'm like, no, it's not. Because what's Lee Harpenny doing and Paul Williams doing?
Keep quoting them back and forth in your exams?
Physics is.
But you said like,
physics isn't big for quoting. But I still did it.
Yeah, sure. You'd occasionally say, "I don't like that question." And you say, "As Paul Williams (brackets Samoa rugby fullback) said,
not Rugby World columnist, because you know, then I'm you know, breaking copyright laws and taking Rugby World's copy, which I never do.
Of course.
Don't know why I made it sound like so suspicious. Like I did it.
It's like you've got like one of your employees at Wales Online listening and like examining
the man with a gun. There. Yeah, it's quite boring. I've never done that.
There's another Partridge reference here with Alpha Papa.
Yes, that's the best you can do, even with a gun to your head.
That's it.
But I think I've got I think the chickens crossing the road now.
Here's the theme from Ski Sunday.
The theme from Black Beauty. It's brilliant. Oh,
I need to watch that film.
Jet!
Jurassic Park. Okay, we are just... I don't mind. Do you want to just talk about Alan Partridge instead?
Yeah. It's sad that Bill Withers died, isn't it?
Because
he is no longer with us. But also family tragedy and all that. I apologise to the family. What else haven't we talked about in this game?
What a good man.
Best episode of Alan Partridge is the last episode of the first series.
It is. Towering Alan, it's called.
Towering Alan, yes, it is. I'm with Kevin Eldon as the... The man he meets in the lift.
His name's Mike. Mike Sampson. Why do I remember that? I once came second in an Alan Partridge-themed pub quiz, in which the final question was, how old is Alan in days?
Wow. I'm losing my mind. What's the plot of Towering Alan? Is that the...
It's he throws a party in his hotel room.
That's it.
And my favourite scene is when he's in the lift with Kevin Eldon, and he goes, ping! Excuse me? And the guy just starts laughing, and then, oh, it's like Cars, this!
That's it, that's why. It's that, and the, you know, him having been very polite and very pleasant and everything, and then he says, say like, how's the area you live in? He's like, oh yes, it's very nice. Few too many blacks. And it just cuts to Alan taking him outside and saying, some people thought what you just said might be a little bit racist. And he just goes, oh right, okay, yes, laughs and walks away.
Should we use his laugh track as well on this?
Yes.
I think we'll get done for copyright
for
that. Nah, no one cares. If Steve Coogan is bothered enough by this, like, we haven't tapped his phone, therefore we're nothing for him to be angry about.
I am a journalist, so I don't think he likes me.
You are. You are. Have you ever tapped Steve Coogan's phone?
No.
Not good. Yet.
That's
the man with the gun in the corner again. Rob Brydon, of course, for a Welsh audience. Yeah. But no, never Steve Coogan, you know. Just want to know what's going on with the trip.
That's a point. Yeah, exactly. If you were watching the trip as a Wales Online journalist, would you have to exclusively focus on Rob Brydon and just refer to Steve Coogan as English comedian in the headlines?
I don't know. I don't really write stuff about that. I just write about rugby.
Oh, okay. Never mind. From this podcast, I thought you didn't write about... I assumed you must write about Alan Partridge more than rugby.
I just tend to do stories about what's on this morning. You know, like, Holly Willoughby shocked as Philip Schofield makes double innuendo about bread. You know, that's what people love to read.
Monkey tennis?
Cancel him with Frank Bruno.
You know, the last three episodes have got progressively looser and less like anything. And each time I think we can't top it, and yet we have.
Yeah, well, I was just worried because obviously I saw, like, you know, you had one with Rihanna and she's, like, referencing foreign theatre and all that. And I'm there like, I've barely seen our theatre. I don't know why I used the word our there. That's slightly xenophobic.
That's a bit frangy,
I'd be kicked out of Alan Partridge's room there if I used that sort of Alexis.
It's weird to have someone that did a degree in, you know, she did it at Oxford, so she couldn't get away with not reading the texts when she did a classics degree, which is a shame, really. I think they should be more open to
come on, guys.
Just not doing the work.
Everyone knows doing work's uncool.
Do we have anything else about the game to pick up on?
What game?
Any other notes about that?
Bradley Davis.
Sure.
At the very end. Obviously, Wales make an absolute haul of it, and they're closing it out. It's like 79 minutes, 58 seconds. Gethin Jenkins gets isolated. They pick it off. Samoa get another chance. Wales then, about 2 minutes into stoppage time, get a turnover, and you think, right, okay, just, you know. In the immortal words of David Jason, you know, play it cool, Trigger. Yeah, I do mainstream references. I do Only Fools and Horses as well as Partridge and other things. Yeah,
incredible. Incredible.
I've got a range.
All-round game. Yeah. All-court game. Yeah.
As Eddie Murphy says in his 1980-something stand-up special, Raw, Bradley Davis nearly does a Bergamasco.
Yeah.
Like, he just gets the ball from the turnover and he thinks, right, it's going to Priestland. And then he proceeds to nearly fling it over Reece Priestland's head.
Yes.
It's Jamie Roberts ducking as well. When he like, Jamie Roberts is, like, so worried that Priestland's going to kick into me, like, I don't know if Jamie has ever done a slut drop before, but he probably has. He's a medical student.
Of course he has. I've heard stories about Jamie Roberts in nightclubs that suggest, yes, he absolutely has.
I mean, I don't know anything about that. I just know he likes playing guitar with the Manics. I don't know. I don't know anything
else. Yeah. I mean, you know.
I'm still not sure whether or not he's plugged in, because he plays acoustic guitar on You Love Us, so, or has done both times, so...
I don't know.
Do you mean like Into the Matrix plugged in?
Yes, yeah.
That's exactly what I meant.
Yeah. And the Manics typically don't bring a Matrix
player. Jamie Roberts is taking. Yeah. Why is that? Why don't they take Keanu Reeves more often?
They do, but he doesn't play the Matrix. He just plays
John Wick.
What's that awful film he's in where two women come and
Knock Knock.
That's the one, yeah.
Knock Knock.
I've only ever seen clips on YouTube. And I'm 65% sure it's a softcore porn film.
Well, okay, so I kind of enjoyed Knock Knock because it's a film that has no ideas above its station. It knows
it has no
it's
idea.
The schlockiest thing. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's an Eli Roth film, so obviously, yeah. But it's... The thing about that film is that it's supposed to be this kind of revenge thing, so you're... angry at Keanu and you're quite excited for Ana de Armas and Eli Roth's wife too, because he's married to a woman like half his age who he then casts. Yeah, you're supposed to be excited for them to like get revenge on him. But because the first like 40 minutes of the film is them going, please have sex with Keanu, and he's like, no, I'm married. And they just do it over and over again. And then they basically like, it's borderline rape when they eventually like basically tie him down, and then he eventually gets into it. And then they spend the rest of the film being really angry with him and tying him up and, like, torturing him because he cheated on his wife. It's like, well, hold on, there's, like, 40 minutes. There's, like, several hours in the time in the film in which he's really, really trying his best not to. So it's just, it's not satisfying in the way it's supposed to be.
It sounds like it was for Keanu.
Yes. Oh, Keanu Reeves had a... You know why he said yes to that. Also, he gets to eat lots of chocolate cake.
Oh,
so
dream jobs.
It's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why
and
was
tall with
why
the Manics.
Why are we talking about Knock Knock starring John?
I don't know. I'm just going to get into film recommendations.
Cool. Go on.
I haven't seen The Mule, but I've heard, obviously, I think you've spoken about it, and I feel like I've heard John Mulaney and Pete Davidson talk about it on SNL.
Oh, the Mule is extraordinary.
Are you recommending a film you've never seen, by the way? Like, all I know
about it is it's Clint Eastwood, and he's the director. What's he now, 80-odd? Older?
Yeah.
He's there like, I'm going to make a film where I'm going to have not one threesome, but more than one threesome. Is it two?
Yeah.
Good lad.
Yes,
and
two threesomes and I think sex with another woman.
And the
villain
is played by Andy Garcia.
Yes. So, okay, I could genuinely talk about...
What sort of crack dream is that?
I genuinely could talk about The Mule for about an hour. I think I saw it once in the cinema and I kind of just sat there in disbelief the entire time and came out, and everyone I spoke to for about 3 days, more than that, about 3 months, I just ranted about what is this film, because it's extraordinary. As you say, like, it's the thing that stands out is the threesomes. And also because, so Clint Eastwood, when I'd heard before going in that he has several threesomes, I thought he was going to be playing kind of like, you know, his character in Gran Torino, or the kind of character you think of old, you know, Clint Eastwood is playing, as he's kind of badasses. And he's not. He's playing this, like, doddery old gardener. It's like watching our granddad have a threesome. Because he's
Thanks
just,
for that.
Like... I know.
There's also a lot of...
I know.
There's a lot of driving as well in it. Like, he just seems intent on proving that I am Clint Eastwood. I can still drive. You know, it's just there, like...
Exactly, yeah.
It's like
someone came for his license.
It's like a massive infomercial for the DVLA. It's like, look, I can still drive the car. And also, look what else I can do. I can have threesomes.
Oh, so I probably shouldn't even start, because genuinely,
without sounding sort of too
almost an hour and a half in,
I don't want to sound too keen on what the threesomes are like, because, you know, it's the internet and it's weird. But what are the threesomes? Are they shot tastefully? Is it Is it like, have you seen the video game? Is it Ride to Retribution Hell? Have you seen? It's one of the worst games ever made. And all the cutscenes in it, which are sex, is just, it's these horribly like stilted sex scenes where everyone's fully clothed. And it's like a really glitchy game. I don't know why I'm revealing this about myself. I've seen it on YouTube.
You're looking to that man with the gun at your head.
Yes. My YouTube recommended is like a car crash. But yeah, how are the sex scenes shot? Are they tasteful?
That's Partridge. The camera angles.
Yeah. So,
Lynn, you put porn on my TV.
So they are basically, as I remember it, one of them, certainly the one that stands out in my mind, is Clint East. One of them I think we don't really see. One of them is another character stood on the balcony and watching down in like a motel. And they watch like a woman going into Clint Eastwood's hotel room and he's kind of doing some kissing. He's with a lady.
Does all his own stunts.
Like Alan Partridge. Yeah. And then another girl goes in like skimpy clothing. And kind of walks up to Clint Eastwood as well, and then he closes the blinds.
Oh, he's a dog.
And
he's
the other
dog.
One, I know. And I like, clearly because Clint Eastwood is historic movie star and was, in his day, incredibly handsome. He assumes that all old men just have women flinging themselves at them all the time. That's his impression as someone, you know, when he's right producing, making this movie, directing it. And the other one, as I remember, Clint Eastwood's like in his bedroom and he's talking about something else. And this woman comes in, he's talking to her quite innocently, like, oh, you know, I love gardening or whatever. And then she's like, no, well, I love sex. And he's like, whoa. And like their friend,
hold on, Missy,
comes in as well. And they both just like jump at him. And there's like these two women in bikinis, kind of like in their bra and pants, kind of lying all over him on the bed. And we don't see actual sex, but there's a lot of, yeah, him kissing and then falling onto a bed with multiple women in their 20s, well,
sounds,
despite being about 18
sounds,
when it was made.
Sounds very tastefully done.
Absolutely. There's more that isn't tasteful. It's just an extraordinary film, but I won't get into it. We've talked
just
about
a
it for 5 minutes.
You are listening to the Squidge Rugby World Cup retrospective, in which we exclusively talk about the Rugby World Cup from 2011.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure, you know, Clint Eastwood would have been watching the 2011 World Cup thinking, one day,
yeah,
I'm going to make a film.
Yeah. He was there when we met him in the 2009
World Cup. Clint Eastwood, of course, directed Invictus.
Invictus, yeah.
There we go. Everything's...
Of course. It's irrelevant. And it was, you know, the following Six Nations after that, when they had Morgan Freeman read out that introduction thing.
They had Morgan Freeman
holding the Six Nations trophy.
Was it on the beat?
And he just said, like, yeah. Oh, yeah. And he just went, like, good luck, gentlemen, only in Morgan Freeman's voice. And it was like... Whoa.
I could do it, but I'm not going to get into celebrity impressions on this podcast, especially Morgan Freeman, because that's just...
The first time I met Moral Schwalger.
Terry Wogan I could do.
Okay, I'm gonna bring us on, because everyone is screaming at this to end. Oh, the one other thing I have written down is, so Trevor Anus has a try disallowed in the first half. He has a try disallowed in the first half. For a double movement. And at halftime, the Australian pundits are getting so angry about this, and they're so up in arms about the fact this should have been a try, when it's not, it's a double movement.
Yeah. There's no such thing as a double movement.
Yeah, that's what he said. Like, if you want double movement, go and watch Rugby League. There's no double movement.
Yeah, no. And of course, that was the last controversial thing Alan Rowland did in that World Cup, so I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I don't think there's any films we could bring up. But then Trevor Anus gets up, and he looks like he wants to punch Alan Rowland.
Yeah.
And he's kind of looking and fuming.
I love the ball, slamming the ball on the ground, the big ball bounce.
It does lead massive. To a, like, there's a world out there in which Trevor Anus then spear tackles Alan Rowland. And that sets the precedent for what red cards are.
Can I use that to segue into one of my Dick of the Day nominations?
Yes, please.
Other than the Alan Wynne Jones Falcon, which is, you know.
Or Clint Eastwood in the Mule. But,
hey!
Thank you,
lads.
Oh, banter.
That is another one of those classic jokes. No, but no, similar to the Trevor Anus frustration thing with the ball, there's a bit where our best friend Tessé Salavea drops the ball under no pressure.
Yes,
and then
it made me guffaw.
Yeah. Not only was that incredibly shit, but then he dummies punching the ball away in frustration.
Yeah, I love that. I also noticed he's got a slight one lock of blonde hair on the back of his head.
Has he?
I noticed that. When he turns around, you just see this one little lock of blonde hair. Yeah. Hmm. You know, I just thought I'd point it out.
Because the game was... It was a really intense game, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great
game. Actually, that's the other thing I wanted to pick up. At halftime, the pundits, the Fox Sport pundits, the ones we were watching, they go, this is probably the best game of the World Cup. With you having watched every game of the World Cup so far again, does that hold up? Is that still the case?
No, I don't think so.
You mean Fox Sport lied?
I enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, no.
I think it'd be my top five.
Yeah.
Out of, what have we done, like 15 or something?
Yeah.
I think Fiji, Namibia is still my favourite. I thought Canada Tonga was great.
Yeah.
I think this is up there. I think because it was a really tense game in which everything mattered and both teams were playing well, which I think is the important thing in a good game. It was two good teams playing well. I can't think of many, you know, like, I don't think Clint Eastwood in The Mule had a better time than I had watching Fiji Namibia.
Sure. Or Keanu Reeves playing with the Mannix, you know.
Exactly, yeah. None of it. The chicken that was crossing the road successfully, not the one that got run over.
R.I.P.
I know. The moment of silence for... There's not a moment of silence. It's not dragging on any longer. So, Dick of the Day, yes. Do you want to finish your thought on Dick of the Day?
Just that Cesar Silvera is my Dick of the Day for dummying, punching the ball away in frustration after dropping the ball under no pressure. So, yeah.
Mine is also Silvera for not just that, you know, that was a factor, that dropping the ball under no pressure, but also putting it out in the full, but mostly for the two breakdown penalties he gave away, which were both really dumb, just diving in the side of a ruck. He wouldn't have helped even if it was a successful clear out. The ruck was already won. He just dived in the side. And for fly half to do that is proper Dick of the Day nomination worthy, even if he wasn't already having a bad game.
I'd probably have to say it's Talaufau. just thought he was useless. But Faletau was really good.
It was like he wasn't even on the pitch.
Yeah. Typical Wales, playing with 16 men. Lee Byrne wasn't even in the squad. Nice niche Ospreys references there.
Yeah, that's really niche.
Yeah. What game was that?
Leicester Tigers.
Tigers, wasn't it?
Leicester Tigers, 2009. Cool. You've got the two people in the world who get that.
Yeah.
And just as well, now we're far enough into the podcast that no one's listening.
Yeah.
So,
you know. So back to the mule.
You've got your entire audience there. Yes. As we were saying, there's a... Oh, no, I could. I won't. Man of the match. Should we move on to man of the match?
The official one was Alan Wynne, was it?
Yeah. So, Alan... And, frankly, I agree with that.
I think
Alan Jones was everywhere.
Okay. Sam came up with really good interventions at times.
Yeah.
It's just great seeing Sam Warburton as a young captain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think 2/3 of this podcast have had personal compliments by him. Am I right in thinking?
Yeah.
Sorry, Will.
There's time yet.
How many of us have got a personal compliment from Razzy Erasmus? Just wondering. Can we just check that? Can we just go back into the video?
I've changed my phone recently, so I don't know.
me too. Sorry.
Yeah, he always used to leave voicemails.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, go on.
I was going to say,
I had comfortably Slay Mapasua very much in contention as a seven. Yeah. Virtually everyone played well. I thought Mike Phillips was less of a twat than the previous week.
Sure.
So that gets positive points for that. Rhys Priestland, very good. Jamie Roberts, very good. But I thought it was going to be hipster choice until you got the official man of the match, but Alan Jones.
Yeah.
Bradley Davis.
Fair enough.
Fox Sport man of the match, Bradley Davis.
Now, I also asked for our mother's man of the match as well. So there's four votes on this. And she said that one of them, the runner-up was Adam Jones for dominating the scrum the whole game, which is a very bold mum's man of the match, mom's mom, if you want.
Nice.
But she went for Jamie Roberts.
Quite American that way. Very, you know, not going to play to the English audiences that well, but I'll allow it.
unless they're from Birmingham, where they say mom.
But yeah, no, she went with Jamie Roberts, who did have a really good game, as one of the few people to sort of keep Mapasua fairly quiet, so... You know, he worked pretty hard. I went for another sort of hipster choice. I wanted to go for Alan Wynne, but I kind of knew it would be an obvious selection going for him. And so, my man of the match is Shane Williams. Because in the first half, the amount of times he had to clean up for other people's mistakes and then make breaks himself and put people through and stuff.
such a hipster choice, the most famous, influential player on that team.
Probably the greatest player ever. Yeah.
Giving it to the one player on either team who had a star above his head on Rugby 08.
Yeah. A wonderful scrum half.
But Shane was just brilliant. And every time Wales needed something from the back line, he would pop up and do it. You know, where there's a line break, finishing that try, a lot of good tackles, you know. He kept Tani Thakinbau quiet, you know. So, yeah, I'm giving it to Shane.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mum. Okay. I think Adam Jones actually is a really good shout. Because he did not one, but two dive passes in this game.
Yeah.
Which I just think
that's a very specific Eddie Murphy reference. Yeah. I agree with you, Mum. Adam Jones had a good game.
It was one of his jokes to sort of go, he did it on the sort of the circuit, and it didn't work. So he cut it from the DVD. Just didn't work as well.
It was ahead of his time.
Yeah, Hugh Bennett as well. I thought Hugh Bennett was brilliant. Just had a great World Cup.
I thought Hugh Bennett was very good around the park, but in the lead up to this World Cup, I was frustrated by how poor his lineup frame was. And he sorted out for South Africa, and he sorted out going after this. But I'd forgotten he had this game where suddenly his lineup throwing was a bit shonky.
Yeah.
But there is one point in the second half where he chucks it terribly. But Luke Charters is so tall, he can just pluck it out of the air.
Was that Bennett or was that... I thought it was a Samoan throw, where no one gets off the ground. So then it's just up to Charters to just reach above his head. And that's a great lineup. I love that. But yeah, there's another moment with Hugh Bennett where I think George North is taken into touch by Alice Tuilagi. And Hugh Bennett just like becomes a human shield for him because he's just like this 19-year-old on the floor with all these Samoans around. So he just basically just lies on top of him until the Samoans go away. I thought, oh, that's nice.
Oh.
Hugh Davis, it's not true what they say about you.
Yeah.
What a lovely guy.
Humanitarian of the day. Cuthbert.
Who's humanitarian?
Oh,
we need that laugh track.
We're getting highbrow now.
We need a laugh track badly. Okay. Do you know what? I think we've finally done it.
I think we have
finally made it to the end of the podcast.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
Incredible scenes.
Yeah. Ben, thank you very much. Where can people find you other than on your sofa/bid?
My bid? Where can they find me? Out in the streets doing Terry Wogan impressions. But also, more pertinently, on Twitter, at BenJames1796.
I thought there was going to be a pause there so I could do a joke.
Go on.
Just gentlemen in the sheets, Terry Wogan in the streets.
Nice.
But it doesn't work because there isn't anything to complete it.
No.
No. Go on.
BenJames1796. Where else can they find me? I suppose on Wales Online, if you want to look on there. The Welsh Rugby Podcast, search that on iTunes or whatever the podcast provider is. Welsh Rugby Podcast. Not the Attacking Scrum Podcast, because they're good guys, but don't start listening to them thinking it's me, or Scrum 5, or Flats and Shanks, or any other podcast. Just, you know, Don't
Squid retrospective.
Don't think it's me.
Oh,
obviously, this podcast isn't this one, but not the others. That's about it, I think. Do you want my house address, phone numbers?
Please, yeah,
sure,
please.
So, security insurance number is it's got a 4 in it. And my PIN number, I've forgotten it now. But yeah, you'll find it.
Okay,
online.
That's okay. Just what we'll do is, I'll put out the tweet for this podcast, and or Robbie will put out the tweet. Yeah. I don't know what I'm about, and just send a photo of it and attach it that way.
Yeah, that's fine.
It looks quite nice as far as I'm aware. So you can send the back.
Good,
as well.
Good shout, yeah.
Might as well.
Yeah.
And if any of you can find me on Google Maps on Street View, try it. You won't, but it'll wait.
Are you on there? Have you got?
I'm not. My dad is.
Cool.
In his tractor, basically just seemingly like forcing the Google van to reverse for him. Just like this lovely sort of stop motion tractor slowly moving towards the Google van. But I'm not on there. But
that's fantastic.
Like I say, if you want to spend an afternoon looking for me, there are worse things to do.
Any private investigators out there?
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for joining us again, Ben.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Absolute pleasure. Yeah.
Thank you for doing it. Thank you for sitting through all this nonsense to you as a listener as well.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, thank you, Ben. Thank you, Will. I can't thank them enough. And apologise, mostly. Yeah. Apologise for not doing a full podcast on the mule, which I could do.
We will probably at some point.
One day. Yeah. One day. It'll be the mule and Uncle Boo and me. I'll do a back-to-back podcast on them. So, yeah, thank you very much. Please do join us next time when we'll do another game. And I'm currently trying to slow how I speak so I can get up the list and check what the next game is, it's England-Georgia. England played Georgia and England won. We do have a guest that is quite exciting lined up.
I can't even remember that. Is it Martin Johnson?
Yeah, yeah, Martin Johnson. Good. Yeah.
I meant is the guest Martin Johnson.
Eddie Murphy wasn't available. Not the
Wow. Yeah, Eddie Murphy. I mean, if you can get him on for the 2015 World Cup, I'm sure he's got views.
The poor man's Ben James, but...
Absolutely.
I mean, I couldn't possibly comment.
All right. Well, thank you very much for listening regardless. We'll see you next time for some... England.
Rugby.
Rugby. Yeah, there will definitely be rugby. Otherwise, I think it's just for health and safety reasons. I'm going to call it there. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.